Members, we're going to call the, we do not have a quorum at the present time, so I cannot call the committee to order, but we will start. We're going to jump around for those who are actually here. And it looks like we have House File, the author from House File 180, Representative Saw, Centers for the Independent Living is ready to go, mostly. There's apparently, you're missing one witness. Well, we'll do the best we can. All these bills are going to be laid over. Hopefully, we'll do about 20 minutes on each and get out and a little early and go shovel or push. So, Representative Salk, you, as I said, we're going to lay your bill over. So, why don't you give us a brief overview of your bill and have your testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Dwayne Salk from Rochester, Minnesota. With me are a number of testifiers that will lay out what the mission of the entities are, how they accomplish that mission, and how this is important for the people that are served. I think we all know and we all have a high standard of how the state and we as individuals step up to assist those people who have greater challenges than we do and to help them have a fulfilling, meaningful life. So that's the core center of the reason for this particular ask. With that, as was said, we have one testifier yet landing their plane. However, they're getting here. And
train car.
We also have our chief advisor who is, I guess, arriving soon. So we are in that particular state of arrival. With that, then I'll turn it over to them. They will go ahead and describe their connections to this bill.
Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Kara Ruff. I'm the Executive Director of Independent Lifestyles, located in Sauk Rapids, and I'm also the Legislative Liaison for the Minnesota Association of Centers for Independent Living. By the way, there's a train car accident just up the hill, so that's where our testifier is. There is a major crash. So we are here today to ask for your support for House File 180 for Centers for Independent Living. Centers for Independent Living, there are eight entities in the state of Minnesota, and we provide a wide range of services to people of all disabilities and all ages. We provide independent living skills training, peer mentoring, accessibility, advocacy, information and referral in all areas of life for people of all disabilities. We're here to ask for your urgent assistance with House File 180. CILs are community-based, non-residential, and consumer-controlled organizations. For the past three decades, eight Centers for Independent Living have been expected to provide services to people of all disabilities and all ages throughout Minnesota with between $1 and $3 million for eight organizations that cover the entire state of Minnesota. We have now been given a fifth mandated core service to provide also without additional funding. Again, not just one type of disability, but all physical, cognitive, mental, emotional, chemical, sensory, all disabilities from birth to death, mild to severe, in every county in Minnesota. An independent study conducted 2 years ago showed that Centers for Independent Living need at least $18.2 million to adequately accomplish this. House File 180 requests $9 million funding added to our base, which includes $1 million specifically targeted for services to veterans with disabilities. This would get us at least halfway to our target after 30 years. We know that you have many issues before you and many tough decisions to make. We ask that you give this the justice and consideration that is long overdue on behalf of over a million or half a million people with disabilities in our state. Just a few statistics. People with disabilities constitute the nation's largest minority group and the only one anyone can become a member of at any time. Between 11 and 15% of Minnesotans have a disability and 24% of veterans have a disability. 47% of people with disabilities live below the poverty line. 47%. 44% of people with disabilities say they're not being allowed to live in a setting that they choose. Two-thirds of people in general actively avoid people with disabilities because they're still uncomfortable and don't know how to act. We urge you to give this the attention that it deserves. Historically, we've been further segregated, marginalized people with disabilities with subminimum wage employment, group homes, institutions, and other indignities against their will. All of these options cost significantly more than the service CILs provide at a fraction of the cost and actually empower people with all disabilities to live with dignity, choice, and the ability to acquire the same skills and lifestyles as those without disabilities. Unlike any other model, we provide services and supports in all areas of life that are truly consumer-controlled. 51% of our board and our staff must be people with disabilities so that we're truly governed by those that we serve. That's why our model works. Just in the past year alone, between the numbers of individuals relocated out of nursing homes and institutions and the almost 2,000 for whom we prevented the necessity and the over 7,000 individuals we served, we collectively saved the state of Minnesota around $20 million, which is highlighted on the back of our handout. There are still thousands of individuals across this state desperately waiting for these services. We want to be clear, we're not asking for a handout. We're asking the legislature to fund what is clearly cost-effective, produces real results, and to look at the facts. We bring individuals from dependency to independence, assist them in obtaining education, homes, parenting skills, employment, financial stability, advocacy, and so much more. Centers for Independent Living return on investment is greater than any other model. We must stop throwing money at large institutions who operate without accountability and without consumer control and allow Minnesotans and veterans with all disabilities the opportunity to become as self-directed as those without a disability. Forgive me if I sound a bit intense. However, it is an intense issue. We have been waiting decades for the help that we need. This is a critical issue in our state, and we're here with a solution that actually saves taxpayers millions of dollars and produces real results. We are in crisis. Please don't let this be another hearing that you say sounds good and let us fall through the cracks. We've been doing this a long time and we've been waiting 30 years. We need your help. Let this be the year that the legislature does not simply keep doing what it's always done. Please let this be the year that we put people first and fund what actually works. One of our testifiers is stuck in the train car accident up the hill, but we do have John Schneider here to testify with us.
Thank you. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is John Schneider. I want to tell you my story. I was homeless. I was living in a hunting blind. I was eating squirrels in the wilderness, and I served honorably in the Marines for 10 years. I was trained as a sniper, and when I got out, I had a difficult time transitioning into the civilian life. I did not have the skills to live independently. I was struggling with PTSD and more. And then one day, I received a phone call from some guy who said he was from the Center for Independent Living. He wanted to know if he could help, if I could come into the office and talk. So I met with him, and about this time, I was at the end of my rope. I had no faith in the system. And little or no faith at all in myself any longer. And he wanted to know what were my needs and issues. You see, when an individual is continuously given handouts, we tend to lose the ability to help ourselves. So the first thing we accomplished was my housing needs. And less than a month later, I got into my own apartment, along with energy assistance, donated furnishings, kitchen items, and some cooking skills that they had taught me. Over time, I learned to advocate for myself, to get the medical treatment I needed, and to file for Social Security disability. The most important thing was I got my family back. My son lives with me, and my mother is again proud of me. I once again respect myself. And now, I'm in college, pursuing a bachelor's degree. I've already completed my associate's degree in engineering. I currently hold a 4.0 GPA. I do public speaking to minors and to the community about dangers of drugs, alcohol, bullying. I moved into a house this year and now own my own reliable vehicle. I have the honor of leading my tribe's ceremonial traditions as the Eagle Staff Carrier. I've also been promoted to Chaplain of the American Legion post-2018. I once again consider myself a productive member of society. I owe Access North a deep debt of gratitude. I had a huge mountain of issues to overcome, and the Center for Independent Living broke this overwhelming mountain down into achievable small steps that I can manage. The Marine Corps gave me the skills to save my life. Minnesota Center for Independent Living taught me how to give that life back. I want to thank this committee and the Center for Independent Living for being here today. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schneider.
Mr. Chair, we also have a handout of another testifier that could not be here today. If we could.
Certainly, one of the pages will take that from you and bring it.
Happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions? Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much for being here, and thank you, Mr. Schneider, for your testimony. We're incredibly honored by your service and your time with us today. Thank you. I just had a quick question. If you have any more of a breakdown of how much is spent in each of the geographic centers and also how many people are served in each one?
Each center, the roughly $3 million that we get is split equally among all eight centers for independent living. And as you can see on the map, the service areas are quite large for each center for independent living. So to say that they are even remotely fully served is not accurate. We are barely able to get into all of those counties. The travel alone is huge, trying to bring services to the most remote areas of our state, where people with disabilities truly are living against their will without choices or options. So, it's the $3 million is split evenly for the eight entities to share.
And about how many people are served in each region? Excuse me, Mr. Chair, sorry.
I'm sorry. Did you have another question?
Mr. Chair, a follow-up.
Go right ahead.
Could you say how many are served in each region?
Mr. Chair, members, I don't have those numbers in front of me. Each area serves, roughly different numbers because some of us are more heavily populated and some of us are dealing more with geographic issues and trying to get out to the most remote areas. I know in our center we served over 3,000 in central Minnesota alone. Collectively, we served over 7,000, and that's just in our core services. Each Center for Independent Living provides a plethora of other services designed to be responsive to their each unique geographic region. So beyond that, there's thousands and thousands more that were served.
Representative Gunther.
I remember one time I played a sneaky and I walked into the St. Paul office and I sat in a chair, and one thing they do a very good job is they refer people to other places so they can get all the services they need. I didn't feel too sneaky about it, but it was kind of fun.
Thank you.
And the reason I'm late, Mr. Chairman, I stuck in an elevator this morning. Freaky feeling.
Well, I suspect being stuck in an elevator is much better than being stuck in a snowbank or a car train accident that somebody was stuck behind. Representative Stock, do you have your witness made it in? Would she like to comment or add anything to the?
Hi, my name is Michelle Pelka.
Thank you. Go ahead.
In 2006, I was a young mother with a newborn son, working at a demanding job with a ton of civic activities. I was at the top of my game. Without warning, my life turned upside down. Out of the blue, I had a series of strokes that were near death. I spent over a year and a half in hospitals, nursing homes, and many institutions trying to recover and learning how to eat, walk, shower, exercise, brush my teeth, literally everything. My life no longer existed as I knew it. I then had to face life as a person with a disability. I became extremely depressed. I had so many issues to overcome, such as speeding up my brain to understand things like how to read or watch movies. Getting used to not feeling half of my body seemed impossible to manage or overcome. My son was then almost 2 years old. I had missed so much, him sitting up, taking his first step, his first words, his first birthday. My looming question was, would I ever be able to take care of my son, live on my own, or do anything? I didn't know what I was going to do. Thankfully, my social worker got me connected to ILLICIL, my independent living center in Sauk Rapids. It was the beginning of getting my life back. It was a different life because life had changed completely and I needed to be able to regain my independence. Naming a few things that my CILs helped me with were cooking when not being able to feel heat, organizing my home, remodeling my entire home for accessibility, remodeling my bathroom, adding a chairlift to get to the second floor, relocating my laundry room so I can manage my laundry myself, installing an outdoor ramp, sharing and communicating with my son, advocating for myself and my needs, advocating with doctors and knowing how to have them hear me, accessing my community, overcoming my extreme fear of falling in public. With support of my CIL and my family, I was able to start living in my own home with my son. After regaining my independence, I knew I had more to give. The CIL not only changed my life, I discovered it changes lives for many people. They set me on a course of success so much so I knew I had to be a part of it. I set out to become an employee. Fortunately, in 2014, they hired me as a peer mentor. CILs are consumer controlled. 51% of the staff and board are people with disabilities. There is no other model like it. As a staff person, I assist others in coping with their disabilities, learning how to reach out for socialization and finding needed resources, as well as advocating for themselves, gaining accessibility in their homes, community participation, volunteering, job resources, plus many other strategies to living life with a disability. Work gave me the purpose and meaning. It has empowered me to be a contributing citizen and, more importantly, to share my purpose and passion with so many who are struggling. CILs are the solution that people with disabilities in Minnesota need. I am passionate for this cause. It is critical that others with disabilities have the same opportunity that that allowed me to get back on my feet. Disabilities do not end life. They redefine it. CILs work on so many levels. It has allowed me to live independently with self-direction, choices, and now light the way for others. Thank you.
Thank you. I see there's another witness at the table, or presenter at the table.
Okay.
Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Okay. I'm Jared Gilbertson. I'm from Alston, Minnesota, and
Chairman Mahoney and members of the committee. Option started working with me in 2012. I was 27 years old. I went to school in Holston, Minnesota. I was a special ed classes, both elementary and most of high school. I was living at my father's farmstead and never lived alone. I started working with options to help me learn the driver's training manual, both the rules of the road and the traffic signs. I took the test many times, reading it on my own, listening to it on the computer, and then we found a site that would read the test to me in person. The second time there, I passed the written exam, both parts, rules and signs. I passed the behind the wheel test the first time. That enabled me to begin living independently. I learned about housing options and got my own apartment. I was able to now drive to the farm to work, and also allowed me to get a second job mowing other farm yards in the summer with my trailer mower and towed by my pickup. I also am employed shoveling driveways and working as a janitor at a local school in the winter. Options also helped me in budgeting a check, writing and balancing my checkbook. We have allowed worked on cooking skills, manual planning, and writing shopping lists. And that's it.
Thank you, Jared.
Yep, you're welcome.
Members, are there any questions on this particular bill that would be laid over? Representative Sock, do you have a few closing comments?
I wanted to invite Tammet Tice to talk. She's carried this a number of years and the differences of majorities and that sort of thing. I'll give her any time that I might have had, so I just would like to invite
her. Any time that you might have had? Nice to see you. Come on down and say a few words.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I really do want to thank you, and I appreciate the fact that you're hearing this bill today. You've heard a lot about disabilities, but that isn't even half of what the Centers for Independent Living do. What they do is, and Kara has been, and the group in Sock Rapids, St. Cloud, has done, is they have a really nice banquet every year for celebrating abilities. And I think that speaks a lot to what this bill does. It celebrates abilities. It takes what you do have and works with you to make sure that you take the advantage of what you have been given. The I can't say enough about the banquet. It's so cool. Last year, we had the 2018 gold medal winner in the Paralympic snowcross competition who lost a leg in a snowcross accident. He was like a rock star. It was so amazing to see all these folks gather around him and celebrate him. And he's looking at everybody going, but look what you do. And that truly is what I think Independent Lifestyles does. It looks at what the person can do, builds them up, gives them hope, gives them a life alone so that they can live independently. I don't want to say any more. I know my time is up, but thank you so very much, and I hope that you will continue to support Independent Lifestyles and to do even a better job this year. Thank you.
Thank you. The members will lay House File 180. I guess I'm told I have to call us to order. So I will call the committee to order, and I will lay House File 180 over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Having said that, Representative Knorr, would you like to move the minutes?
So moved.
Are there any additions or corrections to the minute? Seeing none, all those in favor of passing the minutes, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. So moved. Or wait, I better ask, are there any those opposed, same sign. Seeing none, the minutes have been approved. Let's see. Put all that together. Why don't we have Representative Kosnick? I think you're up next. Representative Kosnick, we're going to hold your bill over for possible inclusion. So if you'd like to make the motion and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move that House File 656 be held over for possible inclusion.
So please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm pleased to offer and author House File 656. It's an appropriation for a group called International Institute in Minnesota. Here in St. Paul, I had the opportunity to tour it over the summer and learn a little bit about what they do. I was introduced to it a lot because as an adopted person and new Minnesotan myself, I kind of took an interest in some of the work that they do, providing resources and services for new Americans, immigrants to Minnesota, and they do a naturalization ceremony that I was able to witness as new Minnesotans come here and they earn their citizenship. Met a gentleman that took them 20 years to finally become a U.S. citizen, and they have the ceremony there. But more importantly, it's the resources that they provide and the job training that's relevant to this committee for new Americans to be able to be self-sufficient and integrate into the Minnesota society. The Institute provides comprehensive outcome-based programs for refugee services, workforce development, immigration services, and anti-human trafficking services. And then I think also very important is integrated English language education. In doing some of my research, I found that immigrants who improve their English almost quadruple their income. About $10,800 per year income average for those with minimal English skills compared to almost $41,000 per year income for those with improved English skills. And so that's a substantial increase in purchasing power in one of the services that the Institute does. With us today, we have Jane Guatman from the Institute with a couple other testifiers, one of the students, and then an employer that uses and hires graduates from their training programs. For over nearly 30 years, the nursing assistant training program that they have helps over 2,700 new Americans become employed in nursing assistant and long-term care. Obviously, an industry that we have a need for workers and a worker shortage. And 470 new Americans upgraded their careers from that in the healthcare field. In the 5 years since the hospitality career pathways started, another program that they have trained and employed over 225 new Americans in housekeeping and hospitality positions, marking the first jobs for many women in the program. And more importantly is with these two training programs that they have, I think it's the long-term patient care program, they have a 94% retention rate after 1 year's employment. So people are learning a skill, getting a job, becoming self-sufficient, and are retaining, and employers are keeping these employees employed well over a year into that, which is a pretty high rate of employment after a year. So I appreciate your consideration for the bill, and have our testifiers come down and introduce themselves and tell a little bit about the International Institute.
Thank you, Representative Kosnick, and good morning, Chair Mahoney and Vice Chair Noor and members of the committee. I'm Jane Grotman. I'm the Executive Director of the International Institute of Minnesota, and so I'll give you an introduction to the Institute and also then talk specifically about our workforce development work, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify and educate you and inform you about the work that we do in workforce development.
And I'm going to interject here that, you know, we're going to try and get through the full agenda this morning, so you've got about 15 minutes.
Great. Thank you. I'm a fast talker. Thanks. The Institute is a nonprofit serving new Americans. We're in St. Paul, serving new Americans in our community. This year, we will celebrate our 100th birthday. We provide comprehensive quality services, including education, English classes, and college preparation courses, refugee social services to help newcomers integrate, immigration and citizenship programming. Last year, we helped over 1,300 people become U.S. citizens, and anti-trafficking services for both labor and sex trafficking in our community. We also operate the Festival of Nations every year, which is the largest multicultural celebration in the Midwest. But most relevant to this committee is our employment work, helping newcomers find their first job and then doing the important work of helping them move into career pathways where they can advance to a higher wage that can sustain and support their families. Our medical careers pathway helps new Americans become nursing assistants, as was mentioned. We have the training on site, and then we help them advance into nursing positions and other advanced positions within healthcare. We have employed more than 2,700 new Americans in healthcare positions. Over 2,200 in nursing assistant positions, and 500 have advanced into nursing and other advanced positions in the medical field, and that's already been stated, and that's happened over the last two decades. This program has an 86% job placement rate and a 94% 12-month retention rate in an industry that has a national turnover rate of 70%. So if an employer hires our graduates, it really dramatically changes their business model, saving employers money, and also providing consistent and quality care for residents. So critical to career advancement is success in college, as you all know. This pathway includes College Readiness Academy, which provides intensive academic preparation and college navigation. 96% of participants who are in the College Readiness Academy completely bypass remedial education in colleges, moving into their college coursework, which greatly increases their college retention and their college graduation rates, which is critical for people who want to move up into nursing positions. The hospitality careers pathway includes hotel hotel housekeeping training and hotel supervisory and leadership training and dietary aid training for both long-term care and hospitals. As was mentioned, the pathway has employed over 225 people in the last 5 years. 85% of the participants in that pathway were unemployed when they entered the pathway. So the funding request we have before you will provide funding for the hospitality pathway and will more fully fund the work of the medical careers pathway. This funding will provide 35 new additional job placements for the hospitality pathway and help to fund the 137 medical career placements that we currently have. In 2017, we competed for and were awarded a P2P grant from DEED for $312,000 per year, and it's a two-year grant, and we're very grateful for that funding. But these funds cover about 26% of the medical careers pathway and do not fund the hospitality pathway currently. So we are here before you to ask, again, to repeat funding for the hospitality pathway and to sustain the work that we do in the medical careers pathway. Thank you.
Thank you. To the next testifier.
Hello, my name is Denise Sheets, and I am from Presbyterian Homes and Services. We are an employer partner of the International Institute. Thank you for allowing us to speak today. I just want to tell you a little bit about Presbyterian Homes. We have been around since 1955. We provide senior services to seniors in Minnesota, Iowa, and Wisconsin. We are the fourth largest nonprofit senior services organization in the country. We're in the top 20 of largest employers in Minnesota, and we're the second fastest growing in our sector. Jane spoke about the difficulty in retaining employees in this field. We have a lot of competition for the people we hire. Nationally, about 70% of the caregivers in our industry turnover, but with Presbyterian Homes, our turnover is under 40%. We credit that largely with our organizational model, but also with who we hire people from. In the past 5 or so years, we've hired about 140 employees from the International Institute in nursing assistant positions. We have 6,600 employees in 3 states, and about 60% of our employees are nursing assistants. And so that gives you a sense of the urgency of filling these roles because they are our largest role. In the past 24 months, 41% of our applicants have identified as non-white. I can't give you an immigrant breakdown of that, but I can tell you that a significant portion of our employee population is non-white, many of them immigrants. I would say most of our nursing assistants that apply lately are from other countries. I would say over 50%, a lot of African countries, because in other countries, caring for seniors is a value and a priority. And so when they come to our country, it's a real natural progression into a career path that can really help support them in the future. We will need to hire about 46,000 employees in the next 15 years, just Presbyterian Homes alone, to meet our growth goals. We're looking to double in size in the next 15 years because of the senior population growing. And the needs of the senior population are going to increase by 65% in the next 15 years. And when you think about what is happening in our economy, there were 6.3 million unemployed people versus 6.9 million open jobs in the last year. So the supply is definitely not meeting the demand all over, but definitely in an industry where 60,000 older adults turn 65 every day. And just to talk a little bit about the people that we get from the International Institute, their employees are really dedicated to improving themselves and growing their career. We have a very robust scholarship program, and we currently are on par to give out $1.5 million in scholarships this year to our employees for various things, but a lot of those are nursing scholarships. And in order to qualify for a scholarship, you have to be willing to work just an average of 10 hours a week throughout the course of your education. And I would say the majority of our employees, immigrant employees who receive scholarships, work well over that. They're in the 20 to 25 to 30 hour a week, and many of them maintain full-time hours. And a lot of our American-born scholarship recipients are meeting the 10-hour requirement and not really going over that. And that's really helpful to us because we need those caregivers. We'd like to help them grow, but there is unintended consequences of the scholarship program, which means people reduce their hours in order to attend school. So these immigrants that come work for us are very motivated to improve themselves, but they also are very motivated to work. And that's really helpful to us. And so we're very grateful for that pool of employees. And another thing I wanted to just mention that our applicant numbers are currently about 200 below what we need them to be every month in order to meet our openings. So, and we're just one example of that. We're very blessed to be so large that a lot of people know about us and we have great name recognition in the industry. For smaller organizations that don't have that, they're struggling a lot more and there are nursing homes closing because they can't fill their openings. All over the state. And so this is a real crisis where we need to train more people to be caregivers or we're not going to be able to serve the seniors that need the services. And then finally, to talk a little bit about another example of that lack of people, community colleges are canceling their nursing assistant programs frequently. Like each quarter, they may cancel a class because they don't have enough enrollment. That happens to us frequently. We, Century College teaches their nursing assistant class at our Boutwell's Landing location, just this side of Stillwater in Oak Park Heights. And at least five times a year, they have to cancel a class because they don't have enough enrollment. And a program like the International Institute pulls from a different pool of people, and they could certainly serve more people in that in their nursing assistant classes if they had the ability to do that. So, you know, we are interested in helping them expand their services so that they can serve more immigrants, and then we can hire more people to care for the older adults that we need to care for. I think that covers it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You have someone else that, Representative Cousin? Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Thank you. My name is Marie Denise Uizera. I am from Rwanda in Africa. I came here in America in 2005 with my children to join my husband because he had asylum. So when I came, now I work at in a nursing home at the Link Brumisten Care Center in St. Paul for 13 years. I started there as a nursing assistant in 2006, and now I am a registered nurse, and I am a charge nurse on a transitional care unit. When I came in 2005, my husband took me to the International Institute of Minnesota, and he says, I took my training here, you can do it too. After my nursing assistant training, I started working and I took more classes at the International Institute for Courage Readiness because I wanted to keep going and have my degree. So the program helped me a lot as it helps so many refugees and new immigrants in this country. I learned how the college works here. I got to know how to find a college and how to register for classes. So I got to study skills. I have so many study skills at the International Institute that I needed to go to college. Then I went, I studied at St. Paul College. It was easier for me, and every year I was on the dean's list. I graduated as a licensed practical nurse in December 2008 at St. Paul College. Then later I said, I can make it. I keep going. Then I went to Minneapolis Community and Technical College, where I graduated as a registered nurse in 2015 with my associate degree. So the medical career pathway I followed at International Institute helped me a lot during my schooling, and they provided financial help and emotional support while I was in college and during my early employment. So I did not have any problem getting college books when I was keeping going to them, and I was confident in what I was doing, and I was able to succeed. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. I appreciate your time and energy here. Did you have one more?
Mr. Chair, just with the effort expounded do with the weather. We have one more testifier. I wasn't aware of it. I told him 1 minute.
Take that off your neck, Bill.
Thank you.
Please identify yourself for the tape, and welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Thank you. My name is Daniel Onyancha. I was born and raised in Kenya. I moved to the U.S. in 2009 and started working in a nursing home after challenging the exam. I came to know the Institute of Minnesota when my wife came. She's there, and she went to the Institute. She got educated there, and through her, I benefited because I started a program at St. Paul College in the LPN. So before I graduated, the Institute gave me 2 scholarships from the Institute, and then I graduated in 2016. Right now, I'm working at Rose of Sharon Manor, Villa Center, and in 2 communities of care, as home care services. And now I'm done with the prerequisite for RN program, and I've applied to the North Minnesota West, and soon I will join there and take my associate degree. I'll appreciate your help through Minnesota Institute of International Institute of Minnesota. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your testimony. We really appreciate you coming in this morning. We know the traffic's been a little crazy. Does that conclude your testifiers?
That does conclude our testifiers. We'll take any questions. Otherwise, I'm happy to renew our motion.
Are there any questions for the representative or his representative, Noor?
Just a quick comment, Mr. Chair, members. I've known the International Institute for many years. I have seen them do the work, welcoming new Americans from the airport to their homes, to their jobs. They've done a phenomenal job that I've known. I keep on referring individuals who need services, worked with them from various capacity from the state to the community services. Thank you so much for the work that you do.
Any other questions? Any other questions? Representative Kosnick, would you like to renew your motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Obviously, this is a good innovative model that is putting people to work and helping our economy and providing needed jobs. And so I would like to renew my motion for House File 656 to be laid over for possible inclusion.
So moved. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's see, who's next here? House File 369, Representative Albright. Representative Albright, welcome to the Jobs Committee.
Mr. Chair, thank you for the invitation.
I think you were on this committee at one time.
Mr. Chair, I served in the minority my freshman term with you as chair, and it was probably the highlight of my term from 2013 to 2014. I learned a great deal, and I have used those tools to great advantage since.
Wow. Yeah, man.
Might I say any more?
Come on.
You give me 20 minutes enough. To stop that's talking enough. About you like that?
Yeah, that's enough, sir. I am Minnesotan. I'm a little embarrassed when people comment.
No, that's quite all right. I'll keep talking about you.
All right. You have House File 369, and I'll move 369 for you for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I will be brief. I know the time is short, and you have a couple of other bills that are pressing upon you this morning as well. Today I want to talk about technology and how Minnesota can support our emerging science and technology companies. The state has an R&D tax credit and an angel investment credit, which are certainly important for helping technology companies grow, develop, and thrive. and we should do what we can to support and strengthen those programs. There are other ways, however, that we can help Minnesota science and technology companies develop, and that is by leveraging state funds with federal research funds. House File 369 establishes a state matching grant program for companies that receive funding through two competitive federal programs that support research and development and technology commercialization for small businesses. Let me just be clear that our definition of small businesses are those with not more than 500 employees. I have two testifiers. I also have a representative from the Minnesota High Technology Association, Mr. Dukic. I will remove myself from the conversation so that they can speak more eloquently to the subject at hand. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Albright. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Dukic. I'm with the Minnesota High Tech Association. I'd like to thank Representative Albright for authoring this bill and you, Mr. Chair, for spending some time today discussing science and technology innovation in Minnesota. And as Representative Albright mentioned, a state matching grant program is important for encouraging innovation and growth in Minnesota's science and technology ecosystem. Currently, 16 states, including Iowa and Wisconsin, have a matching grant program that supports science and technology innovation in those states. And since 1983, more than $660 million in funding has been competitively awarded to more than 150 companies across Minnesota, from Winona to Rochester, Duluth, and the Twin Cities. And an SBIR, an STTR matching grant program is important because it helps take technology concepts to commercialization. And Minnesota has had a number of success stories over the years, and these include companies like NVE Corporation, Surmodics, CyberOptics, Hizotron, and Data International Sciences, a couple of which.
If I could stop you for just a moment.
Yes.
You might want to share with the committee what those acronyms mean.
Oh, we did not define the terms. I'm sorry about that. So SBIR is the Small Business Innovation Research Program, and STTR is this, Small Business Technology Transfer Program. Those are two federally funded programs. They're funded at $3 billion this fiscal year and are meant to encourage science and technology innovation in small businesses. They're federally funded through 11 federal agencies such as the Department of Defense, NIH, the National Institutes of Health, National Science Foundation, and others. They go directly to the companies. They're non-dilutive funding, meaning they don't take an equity stake in the companies. They simply support the research and commercialization activities within those companies. And as I mentioned, we've had 150 Minnesota companies that have received funds from the SBIR and STTR programs, $660 million since 1983.
Please proceed with the rest of your testimony. Thank you.
So there are just a couple of points that I want to make about why this funding is important. Then I have a couple of companies here who have used the program and can talk about their experiences with it and why a matching grant program would be important. But the federal review process for these grant applications is rigorous. They're reviewed by a scientific panel of experts, many of whom have advanced degrees or industry expertise. And each company seeking funding must demonstrate scientific excellence, a strong technical team, and a strong commercialization pathway for selected funding. Now, about 15 to 20% of these grants are successful in the first round of funding, and this is important for helping secure additional follow-on investment from angel investors or venture capitalists, because the follow-on investment can take time. So a matching grant program helps provide a bridge between the funds that they receive at the federal level and any additional follow-on investment that they might receive through angel investors or venture capitalists. And so, you know, we have a couple of folks here to share their experience with the SBIR and STTR programs. and the impact that a matching grant would have on companies like theirs.
We should get them to the table. Good morning. Welcome to the committee, especially on this this day with no problems on the road. Please identify yourself and proceed with the team.
Sure. My name is Dr. Cora Leibig. I got my degrees in chemical engineering from MIT and University of California. I grew up in New Hampshire, and I've lived all over the country. In 2008, after 12 years at Dow Chemical Company, I moved my family of six from Texas to Minnesota to join a sustainable chemistry startup. When that startup became non-competitive due to the collapse in oil prices in 2015, it folded. At that time, I had a choice. I could launch a nationwide job search and move again, or follow my dream to start my own company. I had been watching the tremendous growth in 3D printing for a number of years, and I knew there was an opportunity there. I founded Chromatic 3D Materials in 2016. I went to the little lab space in Golden Valley, and I hired my daughter, an aspiring high school chemist, to help me do the first experiments to prove some concepts. I paid her in coffee. Chromatic 3D Materials has developed proprietary materials chemistry for 3D printing comfortable, durable parts. Most 3D printing materials are fragile, but our chemistry approaches allow 3D printed parts to make the durability standards of industrial real-world applications. The reason why this is important is that 3D printing has the potential to make local small-scale manufacturing much more economical, so that a small entrepreneur or small business can actually bring all their production onshore instead of taking it offshore. The potential applications are broad, from footwear, like this 3D printed flip-flop that we've made in our shop.
They look good on you, Tony.
They're women's size.
Okay. Still, it looks good.
But it can also be extended to better fitting, comfortable prosthetics and automotive spare parts. We're sampling German automotive companies today. The military is interested in using our materials to make durable spare parts when they are at remote locations and can't get supplies. One of my first stops in 2016 in building my business was a visit to Pat Dillon at the MHTA to learn about whether we might be eligible for SBIR grants. She gave us an enthusiastic, "You betcha," and I enrolled in one of her classes to learn how to write a grant application. Since then, we submitted 5 proposals. In 2017, we won a $225,000 Phase 1 grant from the National Science Foundation. In order to win this grant, we had to show how our technology concept was viable, why it was important in the market, why it was a breakthrough, and how it was proprietary. We needed to show how the technology development could not only help us take the technology to market, but also explain how the technology could help us grow a business that could have revenues in the tens or even hundreds of millions of dollars a year. This grant came at just the right time. I had 3 employees and was reaching the end of our initial friends and family investment. To keep the company running, I was contemplating asking my mom if I could borrow money from her retirement and put her written retirement at risk. Winning the Phase 1 was a lifesaver. The SBIR grant allowed us to advance our technology from a basic concept to a proven technology. In short, being able to print the flip-flop, you see. We were able to advance from trying to print our materials with adhesive dispensing equipment to controlled printing on advanced 3D printers, and to generate the data to prove that our materials have the necessary durability for industrial applications. Our Phase 1 results even caught the attention of the Ford Motor Company. At the end of the Phase 1, we had attracted enough customer interest that we were able to win more than $1 million in investment from corporate and international investors. In 2018, we applied for a Phase 2 grant, which will be a $750,000 award, and we are in the final steps of grant approval. Again, this grant is coming at just the right time and will allow us to make another large step forward in our technology development and hopefully set us up to win investment that will allow us to grow from 5 employees to 20 or 30. More importantly, we will be able to get our products out in the market so that we can get a steady revenue stream and grow the company and the potential of the technology. However, SBIR money is very restrictive. It can't be used to pay for patenting or for a marketing director or for legal fees. And this is where the matching funds from the state would be most helpful. Matching funds would help to continue the business development in parallel with the technology development. I'd like to close from a story from a consultant who helps our business with business development. He leads a company in Kentucky. The company that he leads in Kentucky was moved from Georgia to Kentucky solely because of Kentucky's SBIR matching program. Today, the company has grown to 20 employees, most of whom are University of Kentucky graduates. Companies who win SBIR grants have had to prove that they have the inventions, technology, and business plans to build strong, innovative businesses. Matching funds from Minnesota would attract more companies who win these grants and would help these companies have the financial security necessary to take their technology to market. Thank you.
Thank you. Very exciting stuff. I know 3D printing is part of the wave of the future in the technology that we need in this state. Sir, could you please identify yourself and proceed?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to be here today. My name is Dr. Lars Oddsson. I'm the Chief Technology Officer and co-founder of a small medical device startup in Minnesota called RX Function. And we are commercializing a technology called WalkaSense, a device to help patients who have lost sensation in their feet because of peripheral neuropathy and they have balance problems and can't walk well. This is a neuroprosthesis that provides information back to them through an interface with this, what we call the leg unit, I can pass this around, and this sensor that we put in the shoe that measures the pressure that these patients cannot feel. This makes them walk and stand and function better, and this has been developed under an SBIR grant from NIH. You can pass that around. Briefly, my story. I was born in Iceland. I grew up in Sweden, where I received my PhD in medical sciences at the Karolinska Institute in 1990. In 1993, I moved to Boston to do a postdoc at the world-renowned Neuromuscular Research Center at Boston University. I enjoyed Boston and ended up being offered to stay on research faculty at the Neuromuscular Research Center, where I ran a lab for 14 years and had funding from a lot of the regular federal agencies, including NIH, as well as NASA. In my lab, I had a wonderful grad student who wanted to contribute to a gap in the knowledge about balance. So my expertise in how the brain controls balance function and what we can do to improve that, to help that, what happens with disease over time and so on. So he developed the idea to replace the lost sensation in the feet with tactile input through vibrators. So we demonstrated this in the lab at Boston University in around 2000. And Boston University filed a patent for this. And we couldn't build something at the time that really could be placed on patients walking out the door because simply technology was too expensive, the sensors were not available yet, batteries were not good enough, and all these things that are sort of falling in place today that allows us to make something like that. In 2007, I moved to Minnesota with my family. We came here on the day the bridge fell. I'll never forget that. And helped start the Sister Kenny Research Center under the Sister Kenny Rehabilitation Institute, today Courage Kenny Rehabilitation Institute. Brought with me some of these technologies we had worked on in the Boston University. In 2010, I co-founded the company RX Function, and we received a Phase 1 SBIR grant from NIH. And then shortly after that, when we had proven the initial concept, we received the Phase 2, so a total of $1.3 million was received from NIH to start this company, and that led to us being able to develop and demonstrate this technology. And the final thing we did under that grant was a study with the Minneapolis VA demonstrating that this could help patients who have these problems to improve their function essentially within a session with a physical therapist. Then after that, we were beginning to look for the next round of funding. And for the reasons that Cora just mentioned, the challenges that you face as a startup company is that you cannot use the SBIR funding for many of the necessities to be move towards commercialization. So we had a couple of years of sort of drifting along and not having funding essentially at all. We were three individuals. It was myself. It was an engineer who was a student from Sweden, who's now staying here in Minnesota, married a girl from Minnesota, and is still an engineer in the company. We were able to recruit an experienced CEO who helped us move and raise funding. So we raised our Series A funding early 2018. But the gap that we had from 2016 to 18 would have benefited and been sped up dramatically by the type of funding that we're here to support today through this bill. And in the meantime, we were hanging out in my co-founder's backyard. He had built the shed, which acted as our office, for almost 2 years. And we built great relationships in the rich ecosystem of medical device technology in Minnesota, but we needed the funding. So now we are a small company with 10 employees, and we plan to go to market with this device in the mid-year. And we've been able to bridge that valley of death. That's a common term used for medical device startups or startups overall, most of which fail. And many times it's not because of the idea or the concept of the technology not being good enough. It's simply lack of funding at the right time. And this type of funding that we're talking about today would be fantastic to help bridge that gap. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Do you have any other testifiers?
I do not, Mr. Chair.
Are there any questions for the testifiers or the author? I've got a bunch of them. I carried this bill for 15 years ago, and I couldn't get it through then, so maybe you might get lucky. I'm going to ask the representative from the High Tech Association to come back to the witness table. Although, for those of you who don't or had never heard of the Valley of Death, so many of our small companies fail in that time frame right between when they have run out of family funds and gotten the angel funds to help them stay afloat and grow. You spoke to the fact that there were 150 SBIR or STTR awards in the state of Minnesota, and that Iowa and Wisconsin both have matching funds. How many awards did Iowa, or more likely Wisconsin, which is much more, it's not quite at our level, but it's close enough for me to use it as an example.
Chairman.
Please identify yourself.
Yes, I'm Pat Dillon, and I'm the director at MHTA that works with companies like RX Function and Chromatic 3D Materials. So Wisconsin and Minnesota are very close as far as the number of awards and dollars that are received each year. However, Minnesota does do a little better job. And I used to work in the Wisconsin program for 8 years, and they do a great job, and it's great that they have a matching program. And like you, I would like to see a matching program for these companies.
Ms. Dalton, if I might ask, what is the average match that Wisconsin, do they do an actual dollar-for-dollar match, or is it a percentage, or?
It's $75,000 for phase one, and I don't know if they fund anything at the phase two level.
Wisconsin does have a technology council, if I remember correctly, that advises their legislature, doesn't it?
That is correct, yes.
Okay. I could have a whole bunch more, but I'd be over my 15-minute, 20-minute limit. Do you have any final words, or are there any other questions?
Mr. Chair, thank you for the invitation to support your bill from 15 years ago. And together, I hope that we can accomplish great things for Minnesota. And with that, members, I thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you, Representative Albright. We'll move House File 369 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, members and Chair.
The last bill of the day is 537. Representative Fisher. Representative Fisher, I will move your House File 537 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee, I appreciate the opportunity to be here this morning. This bill builds, will refer to some of the things that you in the bill that you just heard before. When you take a look at 3D technology out there, 3D printing, Century College has a very large program that deals with 3D printing with the Fab Lab. They also have a very large prosthetics orthopedics program. What they want to do is marry the two together, and this is what this bill would do. This would be an opportunity to have a first-in-the-nation combination to make sure that they have a product that comes out that helps deal with the issues in the orthopedics and prosthetics world. What I'd like to do is turn it over to my testifiers here, starting with Scott Simonson, to start explaining a little bit about the program, what they're hoping to accomplish, and there will also be some props that will be passing around in the process.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Fisher. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Scott Simonson. I'm the director of the Engineering Fab Lab at Century College, and with me are two of my colleagues, Chad Smith and Joanna, and I'll let them briefly introduce themselves.
My name is Joanna Kenton. I'm a certified licensed orthotist prosthetist and instructor at Century College, Minnesota. Thank you so much for having us.
Hi, my name is Chad Smith. I'm a certified and licensed orthotist and podorthist and instructor at Century College.
Thank you.
And our vision is to implement an advanced digital technology center for orthotics and prosthetics, linking advanced digital fabrication technologies designed to promote business and industry collaboration and workforce development.
So what exactly are orthotics and what are prosthetics? An orthotic is actually a brace that is designed to support or stabilize or correct misaligned extremities or the spine. A prosthetic is a device that is actually an artificial limb that's designed to replace a missing limb or partial limb. We are lucky to have in our very backyard here in Minnesota, Century College. The Orthotic and Prosthetic Technician Training Program is the first and longest standing in the nation, starting in 1974. The Orthotic and Prosthetic Programs are designed in a career ladder approach where a student can graduate from a certain level of training to gain employment as well as to move on to the next level. So they can start at the technician level, which focuses primarily on the fabrication or the building of the device, the repairs of the device, and then they continue on to work with direct care with their patients in providing direct care as an assistant or a orthotic and prosthetic practitioner. We are also lucky to be one of six technician orthotic and prosthetic programs in the United States. Century has a unique partnership with Concordia University St. Paul, which makes us the only program aligned as a career pathway from the very beginning as a technician all the way up to master level needed practitioners. And additionally, this is significant because the novelty of this program attracts people from all over the 50 states, and as well as over 16 countries.
All right, I'm going to speak on the goals of the Advanced Digital Technology Center. At the end of this, I'll pass out some props for you to look at.
Why don't you pass out those props as we speak?
As we speak, all right. If you want to do that, Joanna. Yep, so some of the props are from the old way of how we would fabricate things, the current way that we do it, and then there are ones in there that are 3D printed items that we've made or companies have made for us. So there are four goals in how we envision the Advanced Digital Technology Center. They include promote technology collaboration in the OMP field between Advanced Digital Technology Center, business and industry, and other organizations and the region's workforce. This will be accomplished by the ADTC, serving as an incubation center for outside patrons and industry partners, allowing for collaboration and innovation between internal and external programs. Goal number two would be to serve as an open source clearinghouse for testing and validation of evolving digital tools, systems linked to the OMP industry, which currently does not exist. We plan to meet this goal by creating an open door to develop and test ideas, designing a center to foster and promote innovation, and providing shared resources and a sustainability framework. Our goal three is to support and train the new and existing members of the workforce in advanced technologies and methodologies. We plan on continuing education opportunities linked to continued certifications and licensures, partnering with OMP industry to provide training in advanced treatment options, and enabling the ADT Center to be a leader in changing technologies and how those technologies affect the OMP field. Goal number four is to promote economic development within the region. This will be accomplished by having the ADT Center foster relationships with entrepreneurs to work with skilled professionals to develop business ideas and enhance business practices, and also serve as a catalyst to help support new business ventures as well as existing businesses.
So some of the technologies that we plan to house within this new center will include technologies in the areas of 3D and 4D printing, robotics, automation, computer-aided design, advanced simulation, utilizing the fields of big data and artificial intelligence. Funding for the center will also enable the college to investigate and apply advanced technologies in the area of scanning, patient virtualization analysis, which is important for the verification of technology-based solutions for patients. The center would also enable to have a centralized location of modern tools linked to the rapidly evolving material science field, techniques that would also be available to other R&D and startup companies, some of who you heard testify earlier today, other businesses, educational institutions, and potential startups who are looking to get into this new and exciting field.
So the field of orthotics and prosthetics is not a mainstream career, just like a nurse or a physician. However, the most recent U.S. News and World Report recently ranked orthotics and prosthetics as number one at the top 100 best jobs in the United States and also number five in the best healthcare support jobs. OMP graduates have experienced 100% employment upon graduation, and the growth rate in this field projects a 22% increase from the years 2016 to 2026, which is much faster than the average growth. Also, 75% of the working OMP or orthotic and prosthetic professionals working in Minnesota have received their training at Century College. They remain local. As you can see, the field is growing, and this is due to a loss of workers from retirement, and also due to the rise of vascular disease and conditions such as diabetes. It is estimated that 507 people lose a limb every day in the United States. That's a very staggering high number and is expected to grow. Patients who do receive higher technology prosthetic devices have a better quality of life. They have fewer falls, fewer emergency room visits, and other comorbidities than patients limited to less advanced artificial limbs. Technology is changing the way OMP professionals support their patients. Computer-aided design and computer-aided manufacturing allows models to be created and reproduced by 3D printers. Also, you know, new technologies and research is advancing at such a rapid rate. We now have research that you could make prosthetic limbs that can feel, or robot external walking frames to help paralyzed people to walk. This is going to continue to grow, and we want to be able to provide this to our state.
In addition, the center is designed to effectively foster collaboration between advanced digital technologies and OMP industry. Some of the ways we plan to do this include build new partnerships between public and private sectors, create undergraduate research opportunities, maintain and enhance national and global Fab Lab partnerships. Currently, we partner with MIT and the University of Minnesota, and as well as regional companies in the healthcare industry, which will be leveraged and expanded upon with this. We provide an infrastructure and support to transition incumbent technical workforce from hands-on to digital technology. encourage existing OMP companies to explore modern equipment and advanced technologies to build and refine their fabrication process and treatment modalities, and foster new business startups through the creation of an incubation center in advanced digital technologies.
So as you've heard, this will be the first center of its type in the United States and obviously the first one in Minnesota, bridging analog practices with newer advanced digital technology systems which are rapidly emerging in the ONP field. The center will not only help us evolve technologically, but will also aid in meeting increased workforce needs, which are becoming more and more crucial in our region. Our vision is for Century to become an innovation center, enabling us to integrate rapidly emerging technologies into the orthotics and prosthetics field. Minnesota has traditionally been a leader in the healthcare field, and this is a natural evolution for our college in the state, which we think will better position the state to lead the nation's technology-driven innovations and companies. Thank you for your time.
Are there any questions or comments? Representative Dabney.
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you speak more about how you recruit students?
Certainly. Students really come to us. We have a lot of students because we have a very, you know, there are six schools in the United States who teach fabrication, and then there are 13 schools who actually teach the master's level education. So there are very limited schools in the United States who teach this. We are trying to develop more additive manufacturing in our curriculum and giving them these opportunities such as this to enrich their education and to be of value to orthotic and prosthetic providers across the United States. Chad, do you want to add to that?
We've had active ad campaigns with marketing across the country of billboards, commercials and some things. We had a large grant that came across about 4 years ago that helped us with that. With that process, it linked us to the other colleges in the United States to make the United States more aware of the OMP profession. And many of our students actually get interested to our field because they know someone in their family or they themselves had need of a device at one point or another. We kind of were in the past considered the hidden profession. Not many people know about us until you find need of us.
We're also building a lot of pathways with high schools. We deployed a new additive and digital manufacturing program a couple of years ago, and that's going quite well. Recruitment is a very important concern for colleges all across the region. But, you know, this is a field where a lot of people don't know what they don't know unless they have somebody that helps guide them or mentor them or give them some insights. We also think having a center like this would also make us a lot more visible. We'd have a lot stronger business-industry partnerships. Those business-industry partnerships would reach into high schools and reach into other populations to recruit students. So with the rising age of the population, with more and more need out there, we're going to need to recruit people. So this is a very active part of what this center would be involved with.
And also with our program being 45 years old, we do have a precedent. We have not had to cancel any courses due to low enrollments, unlike what was previously mentioned at another talk. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your presentation. I just wanted to share with the committee members, I had the opportunity to tour this summer, and it's a fabulous program which you've already established there and the Fab Lab, so if you have a chance to do that. I'm a proponent of this bill. I think we need to do more of this at the state level. We need to be strategic and innovative and fund these programs that not only will help this particular industry, but as the testifier said, additive manufacturing is the next wave. Last biennium, we had an opportunity to fund a cybersecurity program that did not pass, but I think it's example, again, of we need to think big. We need to take some of these bold moves, and I see the benefit for the entire state. So thank you for bringing it forward. And, again, it's just more of a comment than a question, but a question here, just how does this fit into Minnesota State's overall request for funding for the state of Minnesota, and maybe you can talk a little bit about that bridge.
Yep, Mr. Chairman, Representative Haley, this is separate from that request, so this was outside of the Minnesota State bonding request.
Any further?
And what I think one of the things that differentiates is that this is really focused on workforce. So it's even though it's at a college, but our approach is to create, take these partnerships that we've established with MIT, the University of Minnesota, the med device manufacturers, and really focus on workforce needs within the region. So that's cut where there's a little bit of a differentiation.
I have a couple of questions. How many students per year do you bring through the program or through the course of the program, whether it's 1 year or 4 year?
In any 1 year or at any time in the program, we can have upwards of 100 students, and that's all across all different levels of which we have, at the technical level, the assistant level, and then the practitioner level, which is our partnership with Concordia. So we operate two shifts of technician and assistant level, which can give us around 60 students. And then our upper level OPC, it's a clinical applications level, gives us an additional 24. And then we have students out there at the master's level.
And then how many companies in the state of Minnesota do this particular type of work?
Can you speak to that?
You know, I would say at least 20 companies in the state of Minnesota. Some are large hospital institutions. We have the VA right here in Minneapolis. We have small orthotic family-owned prosthetic shops, some that have been operating for over 100 years. Minnesota is certainly a well-established in this field.
One other thing to consider, perhaps, is there's something like 920 med device manufacturers in the state of Minnesota. I think that there are some crossover technologies that we would be implementing in the center, which would have implications for a lot of these small to medium-sized med device manufacturers. So part of the goal that we have to create the center is to have one location of shared resources of relatively expensive equipment that we could utilize across multiple dimensions. And that med device manufacturing sector is an area that we're very interested because, you know, computing started in Minnesota, but it moved to the coast. And one of the reasons that it moved to the coast was we couldn't deal with the workforce need. And so I think it's important for the state of Minnesota to realize the opportunity and to get in front of some of these things. And perhaps our vision is a little bit bold, as Representative Mahoney indicated, but we feel very strongly in established strategic frameworks to advance our programs to meet the regional and national needs. And so we hope to accomplish that through this funding.
And I think it was Representative Haley had that bold vision there, which is nice to see. I one final comment, and then I'm going to move to lay your bill over. When I first started as a pipe fitter, there was a member of our local who had one of those hooks without the rubber. The best fitter, because he could never burn his hand. He could grab anything with that hook, and he did. So seeing no other questions or no other comments, I move to lay House File 537 over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And I have one other announcement today. Thank you for your testimony, by the way. I have one other announcement today. Representative Stevenson's loan bill is coming back. We need to have a fiscal note. So there, we will add it. What day are we adding? Once we have the fiscal note, we'll bring it back and add it to the end of the day and try to keep everybody moving here. So any other comments or announcements? Seeing none. We are adjourned.